So I started a new show last night with my boo. And I'm sure everyone here is like, oh my gosh, thank God. We're all looking for the next thing to binge.
Sure.
What new show can Austin tell us about? And I would just like to introduce you to a new-to-me show that you may or may not have heard of called Mad Men.
Oh my God.
I have seen the first two episodes. So, you know, brand spanking new.
Wow.
I am enjoying the casual sexism. And also, I would just like to say, wow, I mean, there's a lot of anti-Semitism just like purely thrown out in the first episode, which is funny to watch with a Jewish person who found it really funny. But
did you know that real quick that Elizabeth Moss is a Scientologist still?
I did know Elizabeth Moss is a Scientologist. So, I mean, call back to Space Camp and Scientology feelings, but and through line through Mad Men. I don't know. It's funny because it's one of those things. Mad Men, you've probably heard recommended like 830 times. And same with The Sopranos. And, oh, we also threw around casually maybe watching Breaking Bad, which I've also never seen. I mean, I'm a really just a big fan of Bryan Cranston, but I was going through chemo and Breaking Bad was at its hype. And I was just like, I'm not going to watch cancer for fun. Like, that's too much. But Mad Men, on the, I guess, list of shows that have been recommended to me 800 times and I'm now just coming around to, late to the game. Do you have anything like that? Are you into anything late right now? Survivor?
Yeah, I was going to say that, that I, much like your boo, I am also in the late to the Survivor game. I was also late to the Mad Men game, not as late as you. With Survivor, I watched it as a child, but then during the pandemic, of course, fell back in. But
Survivor really got a lot of people at the pandemic, and I think it got some Gen Zers like watching Friends for the first time, so...
It definitely did that, and I'll hold my tongue about Friends because I like to keep my own. So there's that. Yeah.
Also, welcome to Why Are You Like This?
Welcome.
That's the ticket.
And remember, the greatest myth about the moon is that America went there in Apollo 11. Good night. Good night.
Next week on Blood Magic Menstruation, the podcast.
I love that we just Me Too'd God.
It's franchising our platform. We're franchising it, okay?
They're going to break your legs and feed you to the sharks.
Yeah, people don't care how many times Dan Brown says that book was a work of fiction. I'm saying.
Well, we've brought it back to blood magic somehow.
I hope you finger blast every time you listen to this podcast. That's just a light
Good
suggestion. Pairs well with finger blasting. Okay? Welcome. Why Are You Like This is the weekly podcast where we dissect some part of our culture, human behavior, pseudoscience, real science, dated television shows, and just really whatever we're noodling on at any given time in order to determine why people are the way that they are. That is my dear co-host, Jamie Ryan, holding her tongue about Friends in Los Angeles.
And that is Austin Williams, having a best friend who hates the show Friends in Chicago.
Oh, man. Listen, I mean, somebody's gotta hate beloved things. I think it's okay to be an outlier.
Yeah. It's like the Tuesdays with Maury of TV shows. That makes sense to me.
I thought Tuesdays with Maury was like just okay.
Well, the fact that you even liked it at all is upsetting. So that's
fine. Oh, I mean, well, I mean, I don't know that I liked it, but
you
I
don't
understood
have to change your mind. That's
like,
okay. You don't need to sway
no, no, no,
for me.
No, I mean, I understood why it was like a cultural phenomenon. I guess what I mean when I say just okay, I have no desire to like watch it again. I think when I it say it was like just okay, what I really mean, like wildly overhyped.
Mm-hmm.
Like beloved on a level that I'm like, I don't understand why.
Yeah. And I think maybe because it just when it came out, like. Like New Girl, for if we're going back to the Friends example, like New Girl is kind of like a more current Friends.
Yeah.
And I wonder.
Finding Forrester is a more current Tuesdays with Maury.
And I wonder if I watched New Girl, which I thought was okay, but I enjoyed as background mostly. I wonder if I watched that like 15 or 20 years after it came out, if I would be like,
if you would be like, what the fuck?
Fucking hate this like formulaic nonsense.
I think that's it. I think that's why Tuesdays with Morrie, I was like, I don't know why this is so emotional to people. I think just because it probably was more novel at its time. And then when we saw it, there were just like a lot of other things that had done that better.
It's like when people tell you that AC/DC is good. Yeah.
I mean, or that's
explain
also
why they like to listen to it. Yeah.
Man, Jamie's coming out here for a lot of fandoms.
I don't know what's
today.
Going
that's
on, you guys. I'm sorry. Oh,
I'm not a fan of Taylor Swift, and this is the last podcast episode we'll ever release because people just canceled it. You might even have to bleep that.
No, I really dislike her. I understand there are a few bops, and we can't keep derailing on this, but I have to say that we did create that like that little graphic where she changes into Anton LaVey's daughter because they do look identical.
Identical. Shout out to the Satanism episode of a few Spooktobers back if you're looking for that one. Shout out to a well-designed graphic of, you know, Taylor Swift becoming the princess of Satanism on our Instagram. What can we say? But we're not here to talk about Taylor Swift or people's disdain for Friends or general vague feelings about Tuesdays with Morrie. In fact, we are here to talk about something that feels like it coincides a little bit with all of these things, I guess, in some weird way. Hear me out on this through line.
I'm ready.
But these are all things that, like, people would suggest to you. And today, good morning, good evening, whenever you're listening, I want to talk about just the kind of phenomenon of people offering advice and people not wanting to take it.
Okay.
And I think I want to pontificate a little bit about the, you know, psychology of all of that. But I also want to bring it around to, like, recommendations, because that's kind of a thing I'm interested in. And I also think, probably just because I watch so little, I am that person that, like, people wildly recommend things to and are like, you would love this. And then I'm like, yeah, cool. Like, I'll put it on the list of other things that I, like, probably won't watch.
Yep.
That people told me I would love. And it's not totally an insult, but, you know, it's just the truth. There's that kind of age-old riddle, how we say, what do we love to give but hate to take? And the answer is advice.
This is true. Yeah.
So I thought it was kind of funny when I was looking through this and doing a little just preliminary research. There's an article on Psychology Today that I think gave three really good tropes of people who are, like, giving advice and, like, think that it's really beneficial. And then the trope of the person, how it's being received. And I was just like, all of these happen all the time. Like, it is a trope. It feels, you know,
yeah,
scripted.
Like, you can recognize each of them, but yeah.
Totally. So the first one that was thrown out was just, like, the father that is, you know, giving regular advice to his teenage daughter to, like, help her succeed. And he, you know, she treats it like white noise and, like, tells her friends, like, my dad's, like, always on my fucking case and, like, nothing's good enough for him. But he's like, I'm part of her success.
To bring it back to Survivor real quick, there's one contestant on this current season. I think his name is Rox Roy, and he's a stay-at-home dad.
That's not a name.
And he treats everyone in his tribe like they are his young children, just, like, constantly giving advice, giving orders. He has no clue that it's, like, rubbing everyone the wrong way. Anyway, go on.
Well, I want to talk about that too as we get down the pipeline of, like, what kind of people are out here doling this out. But another one of these tropes is, like, the manager who thinks, you know, she isn't worth her salt unless she's fixing problems and issues. But her team members say she doesn't delegate and she doesn't give them space to come up with their own solutions.
Yeah, I don't like it when someone tells me that I have to put the chairs up in a certain order. This is a real anecdote. When,
oh my God.
Yeah, thinking that it will be faster if I put them up in a straight line rather than randomly or in a spiral, which is how I prefer to put them up. So it didn't save time.
You know, let people live. Yeah. Let people live. And then the other one, you just got, like, a couple in a pattern of arguing. Mm. And when one person raises an issue, the other person tries to solve it. Then the first person accuses them of not listening. Mm. Then that person's all bewildered because they're like, these solutions are perfectly valid. Mm-hmm. And this person refuses to let me contribute.
This is my grandpa with everyone in his life.
I mean, I live this in a partnership for sure. And I remember telling somebody I was like dating and, we, you know, we were together for, you know, a couple of years. And I remember at one point towards the tail end of things being like, listen, just like sometimes when I'm really upset about something or like really happy or like whatever, I just like don't need like an opinion on it. Mm-hmm. I just like need it to be. Mm-hmm. And they were like, yeah, but like people, I mean, couples should be like challenging each other to grow. And I was like, this
not
a place sometimes I want to be.
It's also a source of like support and relief.
What?
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah. Not all the time.
Not always. Clearly. But those were almost funny to me because it's like this too blind to see kind of like I'm helping, but like the people are like, okay, like I don't.
It has mission trip energy.
I mean, it really, really does have mission trip energy. And oh, God, what a great example.
Thank you.
Because I mean, generally, people giving advice rarely works.
Yeah.
And to that point, there was a Psychology Today article called Giving People Advice Rarely Works. This does. Mm. The subtext being go against your instincts to influence others. And I was like, oh.
Interesting.
And I mean, it's an interesting vibe. And so, you know, look, this article goes on to tell us like kind of a bunch of things we know. That people love to tell other people how to live their life. And there's never a shortage in anybody's life of like family, friends, colleagues, neighbors, businesses, you know, sure. Just the general culture of like magazines or websites or whatever. Just offering
daily
a
recommended
bunch of guidance.
Anything, as you alluded to.
Yeah. Listen, just any kind of advice. Yeah, we do it here on Why Are You Like This?
Constantly
offering advice we can all enjoy. But others want to tell us, you know, what or how we should, you know, eat, drink, shop, vote, believe in, not believe in, dress, exercise, truly anything. And while everybody thinks that telling others what they should do will work, few actually rely on the proven research-based strategies that actually do typically result in a behavioral change.
So not following the recommendations on giving recommendations. Cool.
Which is honestly kind of hilarious,
yeah.
Right?
Uh-huh.
And you get the, you know, in this time, especially of like political juju, you'd go like, when has there ever been a conversation between like Democrat or Republican, a liberal and a conservative, you know, the believer and the non-believer, the meat eater and the vegan, you know, the Fox News viewer and the MSNBC viewer, you know, Yankees fans versus Red Sox fans. When has there ever been a conversation where somebody just goes, you know what, you're right, I'll change.
And I don't know why we're all trying for that, looking at you people outside of Planned Parenthood up the street.
Absolutely. And I mean, look at anybody who, let's think about it like, you know, anytime somebody knocks on the door and is like, oh, let me tell you about our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ.
Mm-hmm. Someone left me a pamphlet the other day on Sunday morning. Yeah.
The Lord's Day, depending on your faith.
Real quick, though, I have to tell you that the only apartment that didn't have one on their doorstep was the people that I call my Chick-fil-A neighbors. And I call them my Chick-fil-A neighbors.
So you knew it was them.
It had to be them because it was.
And they were like, how can we change these queers?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it was on everyone's doorstep. So it wasn't just for us. But when they moved in, not only did they move in using all Chick-fil-A boxes, but two Chick-fil-A employees
really
helped them move in, like people in uniforms. And now
people in Chick-fil-A uniforms.
They put like Jesus Easter things like in their window, like advertising for their church service, like their window that faces like the communal stairwell. And they've been like opening all their windows in the afternoon and blasting worship music. Anyway,
oh, God.
So it had to be them or like luck of the draw everyone got one from a random person and they picked theirs up because they went to church early in the morning. I don't know. But yeah.
I mean, we can't know. I kind of feel like it was them if we're blasting worship music. Which, what are they gunning for? Is it like, oh man, I think that music's so beautiful. I believe.
I thought it was that like they were enjoying it because like the woman is not friendly. The man is like nice, but the woman, like, I multiple times have made eye contact and said hello and she just averts her eyes and keeps walking.
Doesn't seem very Christian of her.
It doesn't. But we can't talk about them anymore.
Surely we can't. But, you know, it's an interesting thing. And honestly, like, a lot of people, you know, encourage you to, like, change. But, you know, what are we privately thinking when we hear that? Like, probably to this example's point, like, mind your business and, like, leave me alone. And you might, like, politely listen. But, like, most of us privately or in our heads, like, resent being told what to do and how to do it.
I wonder if there are some people personality wise who resent it less. I would guess so, because like all of our autonomy and like desire for autonomy is kind of on a sliding scale. But I wonder about people.
And I think who we're willing to hear advice from varies. Mm-hmm. You know, I could hear multiple people in my life giving me the same piece of advice. And I think some people I would hear it differently from.
Totally. Yeah. And I think that probably comes down to like both the relationship and closeness that you have with them. And then also like how good of an example of that advice like they are in their own life. Like, do I want the results that you have? Like if someone's giving me relationship advice who like has been divorced 3 times, like I might not take that super unsalted.
Well, I think that's really good because that actually is going to kind of pivot us into what folks think is like a better thing to do than giving advice.
Excellent.
And because the advice itself often completely backfires. And, you know, an example that the author in the Psychology Today article gave our boy Thomas Plant, he tells us about, you know, he's like, I'm an engaged Catholic. My wife is an engaged Jew. You know, our respective families, all these things. We've been about this for years. And yet, like, some random stranger knocking on the door thinks that they can, like, change all of this in a brief conversation. Like, mm-hmm, what?
Mm-hmm. And their black tie, yep.
Right. And he also gave an example of, like, at a recent dinner party, you know, a friend who is like very close and somebody they really appreciate, but who is hosting, basically lectured guests for a while on like a new diet she was enthusiastic about, which challenges kind of almost everything you likely believe and understand about healthy eating, according to Thomas.
Interesting.
And he said it also challenges state-of-the-art nutrition science, but she insisted that we read some popular book, you know, about the diet and then change our lives accordingly. And he goes on to say, like, of course, no one did as she demanded, and all she accomplished was alienating a number of friends, which is probably not what she planned.
Absolutely. Evangelizing anything is so weird. Like, unless you really, I guess maybe she truly does think it would help those people, because I don't know.
I think that's why people offer any advice, because it can often be like what produce positive results for them. And I think people pause to think that, like, okay, like, what else happened? How clinical is this? How just like individualized? What's good for you is not good for everyone. But kind of at the core, Thomas goes on to tell us, like, okay, so like, why does advice fail? And he says, to be fair, like, we all find ways. Well, sure. I mean, that's certainly part of it. He said, to be fair, though, like, we all find ways to tell other people how to live. Like, we truly can't help it because everybody has a strong point of view and believes others should do or think as we do. And that's true.
Well, and if you didn't believe you were, like, doing things in the best way, would you be doing them that way?
Exactly. And he says most of us are too comfortable expressing those views to others, whether they're interested or not. And I think that's probably true.
Yeah.
But research using reactance theory informs us that whenever a person tells us what to do and how to do it, we typically respond with defensive defiance because we want to maximize our personal freedom and decision making.
Exactly. And I wonder if there are countries or cultures where that's like more true and less true, because like
I would guess culturally that's maybe more Western, this defiance, because it's more triumph of the individual, like, at its core mm-hmm. than like triumph of the community, which is traditionally more Eastern, but I think is like, you know, information spreads as it does, and, you know, the internet and all the things, and social media being really prevalent across Eastern and Western countries and cultures. I do think I wonder that, like, maybe we're all even more individualistic than we used to be.
No, I think that you're right. And then in thinking about that kind of a global community, I wonder if I think that the reason why influencers land as so irritating is truly because even when they're not like directly giving advice, they're giving advice constantly. Like everything is advice about like how you should be doing something. And like they're giving you an example of it.
It's a tutorial of your eyeliner. There's
exactly.
How you should be doing something.
Yes. And I hadn't really connected the dots on that. And it does just create this weird kind of constant like teacher mentor position for the person giving the advice. And that's probably why it's more palatable a lot of times coming from like a sibling or like perhaps a grandparent or like only a select few like special mentor people in your life. Like there's only like two people that can give me advice about anything. There's advice I'll accept from you. Absolutely.
True.
But but not on everything.
Oh my gosh. Well, I mean, listen, but it's funny because like we do live in this culture of like self-help books and like a bunch of gurus and to your point now, influencers, right? Telling people what to do. And to circle back to your point where you're like, what I actually would like to see is like how this is affecting someone's life. What Thomas tells us, what does work rather than giving advice, if we really want to encourage behavior or belief change in others, we actually need to move away from advice giving, especially when it's unsolicited, and move toward modeling.
Mm.
We need to be an example for mm-hmm. others rather than telling them what to do. And research basically on observational learning, also in a little conjunction with it, just like understanding the reactance theory that we were just discussing, suggests that while people will resist unsolicited advice and instruction, they will follow the behaviors of others, especially when they appear to be good and reinforcing outcomes with these behaviors or beliefs. And then also it's like, let's take it to like some of those really like psych 101 experiments you've had where like people are in a waiting room and every time like a bell rings, everyone stands up and then sits down. And then all of a sudden mm-hmm. all these people are doing it who like aren't the actors because like, I don't know, everybody else was doing it. Now I look weird because I'm sitting.
Totally. Totally. And then you like would feel shame for sitting because you're like, what do
but
I
what
not
if
understand?
It was just like somebody told you in the room and you were like there by yourself, like, hey, when that bell rings, you have to like stand up and sit down. You'd be like, okay, weirdo.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean?
Absolutely. So, yeah. That's an example of culture. That's very interesting.
100%. And a recent example that Thomas cites when this article came out, recent for him, is 2015. But one of the most delightful families I met at my son's high school are evangelical Christians.
Yikes.
And he said, I have no clue what their religious affiliation was about 3 years ago. And he said, after spending a lot of time with them at like track meets and other events, he said they modeled friendliness, graciousness, and caring better than anyone else I knew at this large public high school.
Hmm.
Only during a casual conversation with one of our children's last track meets did I even have any idea of their beliefs and traditions. He said they modeled wonderful and appealing behaviors without a word and set an example, you know, for other people, very different, he said, than the folks knocking on your door telling you what you should do and believe.
This is true. This is true. And is a little bit unusual for evangelicals because in the title, we are evangelizing. But, you know, some people find a church community that they like and then, like, they don't evangelize recklessly because they're uncomfortable with it.
Which kudos to those folks,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But the all in all from our friend Tom's plan is just that if you really want to encourage behavioral change in those around you, model the behavior that you want and keep your advice-giving instincts in check. And then he went, I know I'm giving advice here and perhaps contradicting myself, but still, just consider the strategy. I'm like, okay, Thomas, you got a little corny at the end. But
yeah, it's fine, though. I understand.
It's fine. We're gonna give it a pass. But I thought that was interesting and not surprising, I guess, so to say. But when I was doing just a little bit of like, I don't know, just general intel before popping over to Psychology Today about why people like don't want to take advice or recommendations, I came across a video that was really talking about the issues of social influence on YouTube. It was a professor, and he was talking specifically about COVID. And I don't want to dwell here for forever because I too like don't like everything in the world that we talk about to be about a pandemic, but I thought it was a really powerful example and something really relevant that I was like, okay, say more, bro. So
I do agree.
In terms of
before
the advice
even...
and recommendations of public figures and medical folks. And the video that I watched where he was talking about this actually was from March of 2020. So it was like really early on. Mm-hmm. And he talked like, you know, he started talking about just like issues of social influence. So, you know, your ability to change someone's behavior based on your own desires, you know, and he said, look, this is based on power. And at its core, power is the ability to exert your desires onto someone else and get them to do something that they don't really want to do.
Yeah. And if you want to see this play out, watch the most recent season of Sister Wives, where the father tries to keep all the children, the adult children, inside the various houses, and he cannot. And it truly breaks apart the whole family. A myriad of other things are wrong, but it's very COVID control centric. The issues go on.
Man, and I'll tell you one thing. There's never an episode of this podcast where we don't talk about Sister Wives.
I can't
ladies
not.
And gentlemen.
I can't.
You know? Yes. So in this video, he goes on also to say that you have to acknowledge that some dissent and like argument is always good. And honestly, we should encourage it. Mm-hmm. He said, but sometimes in reference to things like true like public health concerns, you don't want that as much. You don't want to risk people getting hurt, et cetera, et cetera. He said, you know, we should, in theory, be listening to, individuals and scientific evidence. So why weren't people listening in March of 2020 when he put this out there? Mm-hmm. And he went into some different explanations. And initially he cited that like a lot of people maybe don't recognize the power of, you know, individuals or the authority of people giving advice. So, you know, an example he gave is like, yeah, maybe people don't recognize Dr. Fauci as like an authority on this kind
that
of thing.
That was definitely something that was happening. Yeah.
Yeah. And so he said one way to deal with this is like when folks don't recognize the power that you have, one thing he said to do is to like stop working with those folks and find another group to influence. And I was like, ooh, cult leader energy.
Wow. If you can't control them, quit them. Okay.
Yeah, basically that's a way to get around it. But then he said another method is to like change your tactics. So then figuring out, okay, what's appealing to this group that I'm trying to change and how do you address that? So really like finding people's motivations and getting folks to see, and this kind of feels like that modeling energy, but
tug
getting
on
folks
some
to
values
see that what and you're doing and like what, you know, you think is right has better expected outcomes than what they're doing. So with COVID, maybe the scientific evidence like isn't appealing, but you have to appeal to people in different ways, you know, coming to people from the lens of like caring about them, or in some ways the way like, okay, celebrity influencer Juju went, that like making people seem like this is a fun thing to do right now. So like, you know, like Jimmy Fallon doing like the Tonight Show and, you know, SNL and stuff from home. It was like the trendy thing to like do things on Zoom, and it was like fun and we're all doing it.
Yeah. Yeah. And then there was, of course, also the trendy social shaming of people who are doing it a little differently than you, whether that's right or wrong.
Oh, we'll get to that. Yeah. Because he said, you know, alternatively, maybe you have people who recognize your power and authority, but they discount your argument. And generally, he says it's super difficult to, like, quote, out-logic people. And in those cases, maybe
they won't hear it.
I've by your actions.
Argued with flat earthers. Yep.
And so he says, we don't have control over other people's actions, obviously, but like we can control our own. And so to your point of like kind of like shaming people or making people seem like the outliers in the COVID setting by like staying at home, social distancing, wearing masks, hopefully it actually becomes weird for people to not be doing that. And that whole lead by example things, you know, ultimately it could like change folks' actions and their mindset because of it. But also it's like you do feel weird if like everyone's wearing a mask and you're like the one person who's like not, you know?
100%. Yes. Yes.
He also said that sometimes people don't listen to you or you don't feel like they're listening to you just because they don't feel like their voice is being heard, which talk about some managerial stuff there. Because, you know, sometimes managing anybody or like trying to lead a group is getting people to voice their own thoughts and feelings or have input in what you're trying to do. And then maybe because of that, you know, you're open to like different tools or different techniques and you do things to try and show that you're actually listening to folks to try and, you know, and to try and like make accommodations based on what they're saying. The other thing with COVID specifically that he said is just like people are discounting and underestimating the risks. And psychologically, generally, people discount risks and uncertainty more than a lot of things. So they're just not able to really imagine it. And with the pandemic, he says it's hard for people to comprehend because people don't really understand exponential change around us. As humans, we're a little more hardwired to understand linear change, like you come up to this, like, point A, and then here's this thing, and then you do it, and people just couldn't really comprehend that the risks were higher. So, like, driving your car is dangerous, but, like, it doesn't all of a sudden become, like, a super infinitely more risky situation if you're just driving more. But, like, if you're seeing more people in the time of a pandemic, it's, like, very different. Like, the rules don't apply kind of shit.
Totally. And that's not something that everybody's brain, like, readily grabs. And I do – well, I did hear people, like, comparing it to things like driving, that that's, like, a necessary risk with exposure, like, the more that you do it. But, like, obviously not understanding that – the exponential factor. People don't understand exponential interest or compounding interest and shit either. You know, they don't teach us very well about exponents in high school.
I actually would argue that's true. Like, why do we spend so much time trying to calculate the area of a triangle?
I guess they think a lot of us are going to be laying carpet down, but not having a retirement account. And to that, I would say carpenters also have retirement accounts.
Sometimes they do, don't they? They do. I hope.
I think shout out to the carpenters. I do think it's hard for people to envision like anything exponential and especially change because, like, I think not only can you not envision what will happen next, and like most people are not like super imaginative people. Like, if you can't buy a house because you can't imagine what it would be like with a different paint color, then I don't think you can imagine like what a digital aged world looks like. And so,
well, a hundo. And I mean, that's the thing. At the end of the day, it's like exponential kind of change is like one example of it. But there are going to be things that you think are right and like things that just people don't comprehend. Or like there's going to be stuff like we don't understand because, you know, we're not, you know, rocket scientists or whatever the specific thing is.
Like how I don't understand how we get to the moon, but I accept now that NASA does know how to get there.
Keep thinking about it. Man, sidebar, on just a quick moon note for everyone, speaking of recommendations that you won't take or you'll watch this years and years later, like me and Mad Men, but newish movie, Moonfall, same guy who did Independence Day.
Oh, Halle Berry?
I would describe it.
Is that...
What's that? Halle Berry, yes. And I would describe it as if Independence Day was made today with conspiracy theorists involved. And I say the words to you, Hollow Moon. Okay, listen.
All right.
I think you'd like it, Jamie.
I will watch it and I will report back. We'll feature that in a cold open, I believe.
We'll get back to you because I've seen it and... yeah, I wasn't mad about it. But the last thing I just want to say from this YouTube homie is that he also just cites, listen, there's always going to be a number of people who are not going to listen. There are always folks who are going to be like at the tail ends of the distribution curve. And you don't really need to address those people. They'll always do what they're going to do. Your focus should be on building like coalitions that are going to listen and hopefully, you know, get enough folks to kind of address the common goal. And your outliers, ultimately, then it becomes the one person not doing it. It's like they look a little weird. So.
Okay. So we'll persuade the group and make the people who disagree with us seem strange.
What do you like to give advice about? What are you like? Let me just chime in here.
I think it's more like recommendations kind of stuff. If I'm like excited about something and I think that someone else will enjoy it, I would share that. Or like earlier today, I was thinking about like, where can I stream Malcolm in the Middle? And I believe that it's on Netflix.
Oh my God, Bryan Cranston, Breaking Bad, Malcolm in the Middle, one of the greatest shows.
And my thought was, oh my God, I should check if that's on Netflix still and then text Austin to let her know. And that's not really like advice as much, but that's like the kind of energy I feel like behind advice that I give, where I'm like, I'm excited for someone's potential experience of something. But
one. So what's the kind of advice that you get that you're the most irritated with?
As a woman working in audio, sometimes.
Ooh, go on.
Sometimes men like to give me advice on how to do my work or what tools to use. And it's really frustrating and like hard to not like react at all or not like show on my face that I'm irritated when someone is like suggesting like a very like rudimentary tool to me that like I would never use because it's not right for the job that we're talking about and like is obsolete. But like you're telling me about this like it's the best thing ever and I've never heard of it and like you're helping me do my job. And that advice is really tough to sit through. Like, I'm usually able to just politely be like, oh, cool, I'm glad that works for you. Like, what I found really works is this. Oh, but thanks so much for wanting to help.
Is probably what the internet would call mansplaining, you know?
Yeah, that's my least favorite kind. And I would say that I hate it from my female coworkers as well, but I haven't experienced that. So there's not anything to hate with that. But I would also like to own in this window of me talking about my experience with advice, unsolicited, unsolicited. I was really insufferable as a child. So like when I was in preschool, the teachers, their names were Sandy and Ceylon, which is wild.
Second interesting group of names so far. I'm interested. Okay.
When I was in preschool, I was like so, and I hate to use this word because it's so gendered, but I can't think of like a better word for a little kid, but I was so bossy in preschool.
Sure.
That Sandy and Ceylon scheduled a meeting with my mom to talk about how I was constantly directing the play. And when they said, what does that mean? The teachers said that I would do things like when it was like free play time, I would be like, well, joke's on everyone. It's not free play time. I'm going to tell everyone what to do.
You're going over here.
And I would be like, we're playing Airplane. I have a memory of like lining up all these chairs like an airplane and like telling kids like who was going to be flight attendants and who was going to be like different roles, who was going to pretend to be a family.
This is just big only child energy, sorry.
It's big.
You were in that only child stage of your life still.
I was. And I was the director of my own play at preschool. And I guess it was a problem.
I just want to say I love a lot of only children. And I don't mean to throw shade at
you.
Them. Okay.
It's okay. And also, like, my grandma has told me many times that when I was little, if anyone tried to, like, help me do something or be like, oh, like, you tie your shoe like this or you shoot a bow and arrow like this, I would always say, I know, like, cut people off and say, I know, and walk away, which is really irritating for others, I'm aware. But not to ramble, but my astrological chart did reveal that as a child, I could have been an insufferable know-it-all due to being a person who was highly self-sufficient in a previous life. So that's a little part of my karma to overcome, is not being so resistant to other people knowing better than me.
Listen,
yeah, to wrap it all the way around. Yeah. So just wanted to own that I was just a little dictator in preschool.
Oh, man, that's my second favorite preschool feedback, except for my sister, who used to be reported on that, like, when there would be, like, story time or they'd all be, like, doing something on the carpet in preschool, my sister would just be like, I'm over this. And she'd just, like, get up and go start playing house by herself. And it was a frequent behavior to the point that it had to be addressed, that she was just like, well, I'm just going to go do my own thing.
And I see that for her as an adult, as a through line. Whatever personality trait that is, I see it.
It feels right. You know, I just... Shout out to the through lines. Shout out to the through lines. What I will say is that Psychology Today, our second favorite resource next to Wikipedia, we had another article where I want to talk about why people, maybe not just because of their astrological charts, like Jamie, I wish that guy cited this, but why people give unsolicited advice even though no one's going to listen. Mm-hmm. And this is our boy Seth Nutt Myers, not the talk show host.
Seth okay. Nutt Myers?
Seth Nutt Myers, you know, he's the one. Okay, so he kind of just opens it up and it's like, listen, unsolicited advice, same kind of stuff. It's like the fact of life that like most of us don't like it. Sometimes we feel like forced to listen to it. But the question he poses, and this is what I'm interested in, is what kind of person tends to give unsolicited advice?
Mm-hmm.
And he said personalities that are colloquially known as alpha are the most frequent advice givers. And in this article, basically, he tries to highlight several factors and traits that kind of help explain why these folks often advise others how to live or play airplane, specifically. So unsolicited advice givers, according to Seth Nutt Myers, tend to be rigid in the way they approach life in general. Mm. So thinking style, you know, unsolicited advice givers tend to be pretty cognitively rigid. You know, they typically think they're right. And when they approach a problem, they have difficulty seeing the situation from multiple perspectives.
And you could see how some of these people would end up being religious leaders.
Well, 100%. And because there's a lot of like absolutist kind of energy in their thinking or perceiving.
For sure.
And it's like an all or nothing or a very black and white kind of energy.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And to your point, religious leaders, one of the other things Seth cites is he says they tend to have a grandiose sense of self or perception of their own competence.
Mm-hmm. And you'd have to, yeah.
I mean, you'd have to. So like in terms of personality style, these folks can be just grandiose in believing that they're like more intelligent or special or more sensible even than others.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, these folks often wouldn't give advice if they believe their feedback about how to approach a given situation, you know, was optimal or superior. You know, it's like they're like, of course it is. You know, they wouldn't give it if they didn't believe that.
Mm-hmm. Like they're buying their own bullshit. Yeah.
Exactly. And a lot of times, like, you know, people tend to operate in daily life with the mindset that the world would run much smoother if only they could make all the decisions.
Oh,
looking at you,
yeah.
Politicians.
I know. We all know best.
So, I mean, listen, but what's lacking, obviously, in that perspective is like humility and insight and as bright
nuance.
Or as competent as these people often are, to be clear. Mm. One would expect that they learned like the truth that, you know, we have to sometimes make like certain mistakes ourselves to like learn and change.
Mm-hmm.
That's true for everyone.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And these folks seem to kind of miss like that soft skill, if you will.
Sure. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
The other thing he said is that these people are often ruled by compulsion more than self-awareness.
That seems right. That seems right. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think we all have a little bit of, like, the compulsion sometimes.
It's like they're
like,
vomiting,
you know,
advice.
What I have to say would really add a lot to this conversation.
There are times.
I felt that way in a meeting today.
In
and
meetings.
I just said, Austin, it's not that important. Just hold your tongue. Like, what you think you have to say that will change everyone's life really doesn't matter.
It won't. And everyone will look at me like, why did you share that? And then it'll spiral for the afternoon. But that's me.
Exactly. I was like, ooh, I should jump in here. And I was like, no, shouldn't. Nope. Mm. Unrequired. So if you know these like unsolicited advice givers, it's often that they seem like they can't stop themselves from
sure,
doing it.
I do identify with that.
Yeah. I mean, I think everybody has felt that way at times, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And what's interesting is that as self-assured and strong as you can appear on the surface when you're kind of, you know, this way, if you will, you can simultaneously lack a ton of awareness. So not only are you not aware of like others' thoughts and feelings, but you also are lacking that self-awareness. So you don't see how your actions are often like unwarranted or even uncalled for or maybe even unwelcome. Who's to say?
Or even that it's maybe not the best advice for the situation, because if you're mentally in a space of thinking that like you know better than the people who you're giving advice to, then you're not open right. to like other people's opinions, experiences, feedback on a situation of how maybe like actually something else is a better decision, because you're just thinking that you like you're just dictating things to them. It's like too didactic.
Right. Well, and it's just like, are you even reflecting upon what your own motivations are for giving the advice in the first place?
And sometimes I do think that it's like for self-assurance. Like, for example, on 90 Day Fiancé, before the 90 days, there's this guy named Ben, who is a former youth pastor who got divorced from his wife and then ended up marrying clearly a student when she was of age.
And then
that didn't work out. And now he's trying to like date this woman who is absolutely like was a catfish in South America. And he travels there. Anyway, all this to say, he has like the worst love life ever, like no connection, just like Prince Charming hero shit all in his brain. And this man has the audacity to give the other men at the reunion of the show advice on all of their relationships, pulls them aside for a word. Oh, I need to talk to this guy about his relationship. I think I need to offer him some advice. And
oh my God,
one of the women at the reunion starts laughing at him, and she was like, Ben, you have the worst relationships of everyone here. You got catfished by a 19-year-old who took your money, and then you kept trying to be with her. It was truly wild. But he just has such intense like preacher, youth leader, evangelical energy. And he knows best, and he knows what everyone should do in their relationship. And he tells like the women about like that they're not doing their women's roles correctly. It's very very unpalatable. Yes.
Yeah. Unsettling even. Yeesh.
Yeah. So just a new example if anyone's watching just TV really, right now.
Yeah. Lacking some self-awareness if you're looking for some reality television.
100%. Any kind of awareness. This bitch is so rude to him when she finally shows up hours late for their dinner meeting after she left him at the airport. And then in his interview, he's like, you know, I think things are going pretty good with Maogani. The love is so deep. She's just such a sweet person. And I'm like, she's not even making eye contact with you.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Talk about being in love with the idea of a person. That's what's going on there.
Well, that's truly.
That's an aside for another time. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, two more reasons from Seth Nemeyers on why folks would be doling out this advice to begin with. One being that this is somebody who seeks a sense of control and order. And this to me was probably one of the more easy to empathize with characteristics.
Oh, and this was my whole point of talking about Ben. I'm so sorry. It was that I think he feels like he needs to tell the other men what to do in their relationships because it makes him feel better about his own. I think it like assures him of his position as like someone who is like better and more seasoned at relationships. Go on.
Yeah, no, I totally feel that. Well, it maybe having somebody listen, even if they're like in their mind like fuck this dude, but they're polite like, oh man, great, like is like affirming for him in
yes
some
it's for him 100% those interactions.
Hondo P. Well, and this also this like sense of control and order, you know, that's something that a totally other motivation, and maybe people are aware that that's why they're like doling out advice, but maybe they're not. Maybe they're lacking that self-awareness too. But I think I empathize with this one because I can understand that. Like, I'm somebody who, like, spatially I like a lot of order. I'm in the middle of a chaotic move right now. It's something. And I find myself, I really have held my tongue, but there have been times where I've been like, I mean, maybe just, like, don't put things like that. It feels chaotic.
And as a person who receives that advice, I'll say it's not my favorite.
Yeah,
in my home.
I've really held my tongue on some of that stuff. I feel like, you know, ask another, but I really think I've been mostly quiet about it. That said, here's the thing. Giving advice for these folks can give a sense of control and order, like the action of it, you know?
Yeah, I see
Maybe
that.
You're somebody who's like problem solving oriented. You think it can be beneficial when it's applied to your life. But to this point and what exactly you're saying, it can be intrusive when applied to others' lives. Yeah. So
I think sometimes Enneagram 2s, besides you, I don't feel like this happens to you, but I think that Enneagram 2s, okay, like because they like feel charged up by like helping other people, I think sometimes they can fall into the trap of being like overly like pushy advice givers because of like,
well, that makes sense to
like
me.
Like the dopamine hit of someone taking your advice and it working, like that feeling of like providing assistance, I would think could be tough to not try to get all the time.
I don't know that it, I don't it thank you for saying you didn't feel that way.
I don't
about
think
me.
That that's true of you. Yeah,
what I will say is that I don't think I feel compelled to give advice, but I think I feel that Enneagram 2 pull, and I have like another really good friend who's a 2, and she and I talk about dealing with these feelings a lot, that we have a hard time feeling like other people's problems aren't our problems.
Mm-hmm.
Or like if someone doesn't enjoy something, I feel like
responsible
for, yeah, things that just like I truly couldn't be responsible for.
Totally.
Yeah. And I think some of us, like me and my good friend, just result into like guilt and shame and then like have to, you know, talk about that with our therapist. But I could see how other people, like your pivot for those feelings, mm-hmm, of feeling like everybody's problems are your problems would be like, well, let me solve this by giving you advice or telling you how to deal with it.
Mm-hmm. And that could be more of a 4 thing because they go to 2 in stress. And so maybe that would show up more pushy that way. But just noticing some through lines to other eps.
Sure. Through lines all the way around. But this control kind of scenario, you know, when somebody's maybe sharing that upsetting or difficult situation that now I, Austin, and Enneagram 2 think is my problem,
mm-hmm,
the unsolicited advice giver, whether they're like doing it consciously or unconsciously, they could feel anxious and they're compelled to write the prescription of like shoulds, mm-hmm, in order to make, you know, things feel orderable and manageable and predictable.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the day, like we said before, Seth Niemeyer's also says that the reason why most people, you know, don't take unsolicited advice at the end of the day has to do with independence and defiance. So,
for sure.
Yeah, we're not first graders, you know, as adults, but adults have spent enough years listening to teachers preach in front of a classroom or being subjected to parents who control, you know, their life as a child, maybe sometimes to a really extreme degree. And so in other words, like most adults reach a point where they're like tired of endlessly listening to others tell them what to do. And they'd rather make the mistake and suffer the consequences than, you know, comply dutifully. And, you know, even if the advice would lead to a better result. And
for
what
sure.
comes to mind for our boy Seth is he, you know, cites the Swiss philosopher Rousseau, famous quote, the social contract that a man is born free and everywhere he is in chains.
Well, that's true.
Yeah, well, it's precisely these chains that make men and women reject unsolicited advice. And that just people across the board, you know, as adults want a sense of independence and freedom. And it makes sense to me and all those things. And so much of that, I think, can happen under the surface, but it was, I guess, an interesting thought experiment to think about on some level, just like why I feel mm-hmm. the tug sometimes mm-hmm. to say something.
No, totally.
And can I tell you the one he didn't name this of why you would give unsolicited advice? He didn't like say this expressly, but I mm-hmm. think we kind of did, or at least danced around it. But like when I was talking about even being on that meeting today where I was like, you don't need to fucking talk, just shut up. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I did, you know, but I don't always. I think some of it is probably coming from a place that like I'm just looking for maybe like some sort of affirmation. And
mm-hmm.
I think that maybe if I have like a good idea or something that's helpful, like me kind of putting that out into the atmosphere and having like any level of it affirmed, I don't know, like, maybe that's what I'm looking for.
Mm-hmm. No, I could see that. Especially in like a meeting situation. I think that that's not the same as, but is like adjacent to just feeling like you wanted to like contribute and have like a contribution witnessed by people who were there.
Mm-hmm.
Or like have people know that like you have an understanding of a certain thing. I definitely get that.
Yeah.
There is,
I think at the core, that's like the thing I identify the most in myself is like, I need like a natta girl or something, like people to be like, yeah, Austin, that's right.
Yeah. 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 No, that makes sense to me. A little pat on the head. There you go.
100%.
Something that we haven't touched on totally. We did like a little bit when we like dabbled on like influencers. But yes, people don't like to be told what to do, but also there's something, and I don't know if it's in America more intensely than the rest of the world. I would guess yes, but I don't know. But it seems like we really want to be told like how much to eat, how much to sleep, how much water to drink each day. Should I not be sitting anymore? I feel like that's some thirst
of like answers. Like maybe this goes back to, they gave one example of like people who are advice givers being people who are really like black and white thinkers, and I think on some level like people do like rules.
Totally. I think it's easier if you have rules, and if someone could tell
absolutely
you exactly
shout
how
out
much
to my high school uniform. I wish somebody told me what to wear every day now. Shoot,
it's simpler. That's why Barack Obama didn't wear a bevy of suit colors. Just one
decision.
Well,
he did that one time and whew, never lived it down.
Well, it's not every, he wasn't making the choice every morning is what I mean.
Yeah. Him, Steve Jobs, Elizabeth Holmes, not all these people are the same.
Yeah. Yeah. But no, I've actually, this is something I've been thinking about a lot recently is like how much Americans want to be told like how much to like put in our bodies and how much to sleep and kind of like these physical rules of living for like optimal health or like morality. And I really feel like it's attached to like puritanical roots, like we talk about lot in that like so much of the Puritan culture was about restriction. It was about going without. It's about the virtue of giving something up, of being uncomfortable.
Abstinence.
Absolutely. And so it makes sense to me in like a trickle down, like through the ages kind of way that in America, we would feel like we need to go to an expert, whoever that is. It's not the church for us now, but like someone to tell us like, How am I supposed to deal with this body that I have? Like there's a strange relationship in like advice and our physical bodies in America specifically, I think. And I would be curious about other countries, how they, if they seek out as much of that kind of nonsense as we do, countries that didn't have a puritanical start.
Well, and what I think that's a really valuable point, like the puritanical roots of the country. But you know what I would throw out there too, is because, okay, we talked about the COVID, like advice, rules, whatever of it all. And people are like, fuck this.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're giving this example of people just like always seeking some kind of like health approach.
And people think there's a right answer, it feels like.
Exactly. And I think what that has to do is like, I think maybe there are a couple different versions of things. Like wear a mask, like some people feel like that, you know, encroached on their freedom. But I think on the flip side, this thing that people, you know, we have a lot of complicated body feelings and, you know, you even think about like sex advice and that kind
absolutely
of thing.
Absolutely. That's in that same everything. Yeah.
Yeah, fitness, health, wellness, diet, nutrition, sex, whatever it is. I think a lot of maybe that personally stems from insecurities and wanting there to be an easier, like, quick fix than, like, really is possible. That you somebody can say, like, if you just do these three things, then you'll like the way you look.
You're right, because people do this with money also. Like,
yes.
Seeking out bad, quick get-rich schemes. Yeah.
Yes.
And bad advice. Yeah.
I think that comes from like a deep-seated desire place and people wanting there to be like an easy answer to their problem, whether it's their body, their finances, their sex life, like whatever it is.
Totally, totally. And I think that that's, we could also tie that right back to religion and Puritanism in that like there is a right answer and it's comforting to be able to lean against like a right answer.
Yeah. Yeah.
But we cannot.
And you know what? Sometimes I like rules. Okay. Sometimes I like being told what to do. Right now, I would say professionally, I'm not getting enough of that. And it's not fun.
That is a conversation for you and I to have offline for my feelings. But yeah, I get that. I do love freedom, but sometimes you got to know what the fuck's going on.
And I guess at the end of the day, it's like, I don't know, like, give me some advice, give me some rules, but like not too much and like not about some things, you know?
Well, yeah, I just get like decision fatigue if I have like no parameters about anything. Well, I guess like that's true of like growing up. It's like you have more and more guidance. Like when you're growing up, it's like playing like bowling with bumpers. And then when you're an adult, like, you know, we stop taking advice when we get into our oldest age, which is why I refuse to have a doctor over 45.
Oh, I like that as a hot take. That is interesting.
I just don't want you to have, I know that they have to do continuing education, but like your memory is more crystallized, which is good for certain things, but it's also less flexible. And I just don't want someone who did the bulk of their training 50 years ago. I just don't.
I actually, that's my favorite hot take of the episode.
Thank you.
And on that note, I see our musical director perhaps polishing those mallets, polishing them away. So I guess cue the vibraphone.
Cue it.
So we've cued that vibraphone and we are pivoting into our favorite kind of verbal game. Three choices with rules. Okay. So in this scenario, you are going to have to follow the advice of a group of individuals for kind of three durations. So one person or one group, I should say, you have to, you know, follow their advice for 10 years of your life.
Okay.
One group, you have to follow their advice all the things that they say for like a year of your life.
Okay.
And then the other people, like, you're not going to fuck with at all. Like, you just never have to take their perspective on what to do.
Okay. Got it.
Okay. The groups of people are, unsurprisingly, your parents.
Okay.
Just following whatever it is they're imagining for you and what they think you should do.
Sure.
I think we all have complicated feelings about, really. Yeah,
each of us.
The second group of people being your grade school teachers. So first through fifth grade, we're going to say it's a panel of five. Okay. Whoever your classroom teachers were in that time period, now make up your board of directors. Okay.
Oh, my God.
Which, I mean, what a smattering of people, really. Like, I mean, I think that's usually true.
I have folks. A pretty diverse panel. Go on.
I'm intrigued by mine for sure. And then your last panel will just be a culmination. And we're going to go ahead and say there's not going to be any animosity between this board of directors for, you know, your sake. Okay. Right? You know, they're going to work harmoniously together because they're the only group of people that you'd be like, would they? Unless your parents are divorced, in which case, like, if that's a tenuous situation, I'm just saying for folks, you know, you could play that however you want to if you're playing along at home. So this last group, they're going to get along fine, but it's just going to be a little counsel of like your previous like romantic / sexual partners.
Oh my God. All of them?
We can't disclose all, you know, ins and outs of our lives here, but I'd say, you know, like a, we'll give it like a, you know, top 5 to 10, whatever feels right, okay. You know?
Wow. Oh my God, that's funny. Well, I actually, ironically, I think I feel the safest with that group of people dictating my life for the longest period of time because they are my peers.
You also picked them at some point in some capacity. That's all I'm saying.
This, I didn't pick them for this, but yes.
Yeah. You know? That's fair. That's fair.
It wasn't the longevity wasn't the goal in that those moments. So, sure. Okay. Yeah, I feel the most confident putting past sexual partners in control of 10 years of my life.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And then we're going to go grade school teachers for 1 year because the grade school.
I mean, just what? Like, you could write a book. Like, come on.
Well, I'm thinking, like, what an amazing television show that would be if, like, five, like, after death elementary school teachers were.
Dude, free idea. Why doesn't this show exist?
Fucking awesome show. Anyway. That group of people, there are some terrible ones and some really great ones. And so they really balance out. It feels kind of like the Supreme Court right now where, you know, and I just picture them having conversations.
All elected
about my
officials
life.
In your life and not all were created equal. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. But anyway, I guess I have the most trust for, or I don't have as much trust for them as I do the sexual partners because. The teachers are so much older than me. And especially now that, like, I'm in my early 30s, like, dated. All those people, some of them may not be alive, but they are accustomed to and would give me advice based on a world that is, I would think, no longer here. So,
sure.
Yeah. Let me circle back to I'd like my doctor to be under 45, even when I'm 80. When I'm 80, I want a young doctor.
Doctors under 45.
I need 10
this
years
is
of
your
experience,
new platform.
Though.
This is so good.
45 is the sweet spot where they've had experience. They're not super green anymore. And, like, they figured out their work-life balance potentially. And they're not so tired. Anyway, enough about my doctors. Would you choose the same?
Well, the interesting argument is that we could bring up that kind of throws a wrench into this is are these years forward looking? Because you could argue that there was a time in your life where you really were mostly following your parents' advice. And
well,
that feels like a pretty
you did 10 years
flipping,
of that.
Yeah.
Mostly.
I mean, like, it's already kind of happened, I think, for a lot of us in some way. So if we're forward looking exclusively, then I do think past sexual partners are also, like, my long-term counsel for the 10 years. Listen.
They're more politically aligned with me, I think, than any of the other groups.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair. Yeah. And
maybe not the early ones. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I mean, listen, we're all strolling down memory lane right now. No, but I think there were things about them as people and their beliefs, personality, interests, whatever it was, some of these, you know, short, some of these long. Who's to say how long these people
were?
We
valued something about
them. Could have been years, could have been hours. We're not here to disclose all of that.
We don't know.
But moments, truly. But I would say that would definitely be my 10-year counsel. Honestly, I feel like kind of I initially thought I was going to, like, pick my parents for the singular year. I think it would be interesting because my parents are, like, pretty, like, misaligned in what their advice would be, and it would be, like, fun.
Mm-hmm. That's how I feel about the teachers, but a more diverse – there's more people in the group of teachers, so you have more different
opinions. Well, you really
inspired
me, though, because it just – it honestly, I, like, want to have that experience because it just sounds like – wild. Like, I think I know what
teachers,
it's like to be, like, told what to do by my parents. But I'm like, what if, you know, my fifth grade teacher were making
Linda
personal
Kane.
And professional decisions for me?
Yeah, Mrs. JT, my second grade teacher, she was the shit. She would be really holding it down
for
me.
I mean, you had a crush on her, I feel like.
No, I definitely had a crush on Miss Monk, who was absolutely just a Miss Honey clone. Anyway, enough about that.
I love my fourth grade teacher. Shout out to Miss Alexakis, wherever she is. I would let her make some choices for me.
My teacher in fourth grade ran away with the fifth grade teacher to New Jersey for his singing career. And they were both married at the beginning of the year and then were with each other running away at the end of the year. Do you remember that?
That seems like a fun, chaotic person to give some advice.
Yeah, it does. He sang, "I Believe I Can Fly" at our, like, end of the year concert. And I was like, why is a teacher singing a whole song?
He had it, you know, it just, he was a very nice man. I was a fan.
Okay.
I didn't have him in class, but, it, you know, he didn't have a bad singing voice.
Yeah, he used to creep into my classroom to try to flirt with my teacher all Absolutely. The damn time. And so we knew what was going on.
We knew what was up.
Yeah.
We knew what was up. I was across the hall. Anyway.
You were.
Well, I would like to hear about how interested you are in the television show where your previously, you know, grade school teachers, now retired, are running your life. I want to hear about it. I want to hear about which grade you're the most interested in. Shout out to my second grade teacher, Ms. Thompson. I'm happy to have her on the panel. And, you know, listen, just let us know. As always, you can find us on the internet via email at whyyoulikethispod@gmail.com, on Instagram at whyyoulikethispod, and on Twitter at WAYLTTweets. You know, good night, good morning, good day, good evening. We will see you next week.
We sure will. And my closing advice to everyone is that if when you get a colonoscopy, know that that dosage is a one size fits all. They give everyone the same prescription of the saltwater shit that you have to drink that flushes you out, whether you're a 400-pound, 7-foot Andre the Giant, or if you are under 5 feet tall. So just know, if you're a smaller person, my advice is drink less, even if the doctor doesn't tell you to, or just fucking, you'll just absolutely,
you guys,
let it
rip through
you.
This is not a medical advice podcast, but these hot takes are what I care about. Doctors under 45, you heard it here first.
And you know what a doctor under 45 told me after I had my colonoscopy, when I went to a different doctor? You should have gotten a different prescription. Did you know that now they have one that's just 8 ounces? And I said, where were you a week ago? And the answer was probably still in school. So, guys, just do your research on the colonoscopy prep, because it can be horrible or it can be moderately bad. So, okay,
here
now I've talked
like
for a full minute.
Jamie
Goodbye.
Is trying to make your colonoscopies better for you.
That's mm-hmm. why I give advice. I'm trying to share from my learned experience. That's what, you know, I'm just, it's fine. I'm
it
everybody's dad.
It all comes full circle.
All right, bye.
Bye.